You waited long enough. After hyping this series up for way too long, Nick and Mike are hopping into the discography of a band that should have stayed retired a long time ago. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Dirt, a Motley Crue retrospective on Renegade Jukebox.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Renegade Jukebox on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. I'll be your host for this evening. Joining me, as always, is the Super Saiyan Death Metal God himself, Nick.
Guys, you have no idea how happy I am that we're back and we're doing this again. Like, it's already been something me and Mike have been talking about doing a series on for a while now, and I'm just gonna be honest, I'm just gonna kind of like blindside Mike a little bit. I kind of regret it and kind of feel like it's my fault that we didn't get this done sooner, mostly because I had a lot of stuff happen in my life in the last year that really took a lot out of me, to be honest. But we got Why We Love This Band out of it, so I guess there is some upsides to it. And plus, we're starting to add thumbnails that look really good to the episodes and everything, and intros, which aren't going away anytime soon, as you can tell by the beginning of this.
Yeah, the planning of this series has been, it's been quite a lot of fun, but obviously this is our retrospective for Motley Crue. And episode one is, well, we're starting at the beginning with their 1981/1982 release, Too Fast for Love. But before we get there, let's kind of lay the groundwork a little bit, because while I am, of the two of us, probably more, I guess, well-versed in glam metal, Nick, I want to get your perspective on this. So all of these records that we're listening to, you're basically hearing for the first time, correct?
Pretty much. I'm just going to be as upfront as I possibly can. I never really was a glam or hair metal guy. I just thought it lacked any of the aggression or intensity that I love out of metal to begin with. I just thought it was all too slick and overproduced and just too much of a product of its time. I mean, yes, you could make that argument about thrash metal to some extent, but thrash feels timeless mostly because it feels like a direct continuation of the new wave of British heavy metal, whereas this, it felt like trying to do an impression of Van Halen, but not doing it nearly as well. And I come up with that analogy really just because Van Halen is pretty much the largest influence on most of the glam metal bands. So obviously, and just again, starting out with more intense stuff like melodic death metal, thrash, prog metal, that was always just way more up my alley personally. But beyond that, yeah, just this is kind of my really first impression on Motley Crue's catalog. I was more just kind of thinking, like, going over how we kind of first heard the band, but I'll let Mike kind of go over like his feelings about glam and then maybe segue into how he kind of first heard of Crue.
My overall thoughts on glam are pretty much like the same as yours, although because I grew up watching VH1 pretty much all the time, I've kind of gained a little bit of an appreciation for its place in culture, the better acts that have come from this genre. Of course, nobody did this stuff better than like Van Halen or Guns N' Roses, or say what you will about Sebastian Bach as a human being, but the
to
first
say
two
the least.
Yeah. So there is a lot of nostalgia when it comes to glam metal. And how I first was exposed to Motley Crue was through a bunch of those VH1 rockumentaries. But the one that stands out the most is a 4-part series called Heavy, The Story of Metal. Episode 3 is the one that's like all focused on the LA glam metal scene. And Motley Crue has a big segment in that episode.
So I'm just going to kind of jump on one of your points, just and because I'm going to make this abundantly clear. I do think that there are some genuinely talented musicians going on here. Obviously, this is the pre-Pro Tools and Auto-Tune days, but this is also the days where you had to lay stuff down to tape, and sometimes you had to do stuff in multiple takes, so that's also a thing. But nonetheless, obviously you had to bring your A game in terms of being in the studio. So I can, on some level, I guess, appreciate the musicianship and effort behind the music, even if it's not exactly my thing. To jump into how I kind of first heard of Motley Crue, pretty much anybody making any really dated reference to Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson's relationship in the 90s and early 2000s, that was a commonplace, I think, on most school playgrounds. But really beyond that, like, most of these songs a lot of people have already heard on the radio to death. You've probably heard Shout at the Devil or Looks That Kill. You've probably heard Wild Side or Home Sweet Home or Girls, 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 Dr. Feelgood, Kickstart My Heart. Like, a lot of people know these songs, but again, this is going to mostly just be my first impression of these as full front to back album experiences. So much so, I'm gonna kind of introduce this as part of the series. So I last year bought the box set that was released of the first five albums. So that's the way I'm experiencing them for the first time, is through this box set, and obviously starting with Too Fast for Love. Just to kind of also segue into this to kind of introduce our band members, because they are, aside really from Ozzy, Dio, Lemmy, I can't really think of anybody in the 80s who's borderline a celebrity other than every member of Motley Crue.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Like, all four of these members are, like, themselves just larger than life personalities, and we'll get more into the dirt probably later into their discography, but for now let's actually introduce who the hell these people are.
Excuse the pun about the dirt. But yes, we are going to introduce all four of our, I guess you could say, washed up, but they're also still making millions off of this reunion tour they're doing, so I don't really care. So one of these members I have actually met, so let's introduce our lead songwriter, none other than Nikki Sixx himself on bass. Then we have our drummer slash porn star, Tommy Lee. We have our walking crypt keeper, Mick Mars, talented ass shredder, I'll give him that. And of course, Vince Neil on vocals. I will be making plenty of intros using modern performances, and you all know the reason why, so I will save all of the jokes for our final episode. I'll just let the intros do the talking each time.
Yep.
But regardless, so to kind of just give a little bit of a brief history before we hop into the actual record itself, Motley Crue really mostly came together because Tommy Lee was already in one band at the time, but wanted to form a brand new one. He was a fan of a local band called London, and he had posters all over his bedroom walls, but the one member he was obsessed with the most was Nikki Sixx, but apparently it was more just due to his stage presence, not so much his technical ability. Well, kind of just put it that way for the time being, but basically the two of them ended up becoming friends, started working on material together, and just through, I'm just going to say for the time being, a series of events ends up meeting Mick Mars, and then later on down the road, Vince Neil. They all decide to form a band together. They can't decide on a name, so Mick eventually comes up with the idea of just calling them Motley Crue without the E, but then they decide to add the dot dots on the O and the U and the E at the end of it, so That's the very simplified version of how we even got the band and their name for that matter. And this album is noteworthy because it was independently released initially, but obviously got a reissue through Elektra Records. And me and Mike are mainly just going to be covering the Elektra version, sans the one track for the end. Mike, how do you feel about this album, just kind of as on a first impression basis?
On a first impression basis, this album is solid. It's certainly rough around the edges, and I told this to Nick off air, but as far as like iconic debut records go, it's no Van Halen 1, it's no Appetite for Destruction, but it has the energy, it has that edge to it. It's just not all the songs are that terribly memorable.
I was so gonna use Van Halen 1 there, but I appreciate you still bringing it up. Yeah, just coming from more of a thrash and old school prog and melodic death metal background, I do think the album is worth checking out. Absolutely. I do think that it does kind of lay the groundwork for future records and glam metal really as a whole. It definitely has a lot more dirt under its nails than a lot of the glam that I'm used to hearing on my local radio station at my job, but I'm going to be honest, some songs I have a hard time really getting into, but some others I can definitely appreciate what's going on for sure. I say, how about we just cut into the actual songs on this record? I am going to warn our listeners, this is probably going to be what we're going to call, this might be a reoccurring thing even for all we know. This is going to be what I'm going to dub the boring episode, where we don't feel like we have that much to say about an album, but we're obviously obligated to talk about it.
The good news is the album doesn't actually start on a boring note.
Absolutely not.
I have maintained that Livewire is as good an opening track as you're going to get for an album that probably didn't have that big of a production budget.
Oh, from what I'm aware is that they basically self-financed this, and their original record label, Leather Records, they were the ones who mainly put up the funding to even get it released to begin with. So you got to give them that for, you know, just lack of a better phrase, putting this album together on the budget of a ham sandwich. But you started off with a song as good as Livewire. Yeah, it is the best known song on this album. It's the one that gets played live the most, but for me, it feels more like a traditional or just old school heavy metal song more than a glam song.
Yeah, it's got the speed. It's got like the fast pace to it. Vince Neil's vocals actually sound like, well, better than modern day, but still.
Yeah, I even made notes saying that, like, even the lyrics, for the most part on this song, they're not just, they don't just feel like filler to connect to the chorus. They actually feel like they matter here, and like feel like if you're listening to something that has some urgency behind it. And it does feel like an appropriate leadoff single to introduce a new band on MTV back in 1981. Especially when music videos just started to become a thing. Like, I even remember seeing bits of the music video with the sword lighting Nikki on fire in the video. But, like, just to kind of hop back into the song, though, you get to hear little bits of Tommy Lee doing some early double kick on the song. Like, even the part where the song slows down and builds back up into the chorus riff again, it's genuinely pretty great here. My only real gripe with it, I do kind of wish it had more of a standout guitar solo on it, but I'm not going to bitch about it too much. A good song's a good song.
Yeah, and that slow part that you mentioned is a great first like showcase for Nikki's bass grooves, which I'm going to bring up a few more times throughout this review.
See, I'm going to say this probably more later on, but his more simplistic approach, I can be a little bit more forgiving of it, because at this album's core, it is kind of like, to kind of use a quotation from the Wikipedia page, kind of just feels like if you threw Bowie, the Sex Pistols, and Black Sabbath in a blender together, which I can kind of see the mental image. Bowie for the image, Sex Pistols for the simplicity, Sabbath for the darkness. You know, I can buy that.
Yeah, that's a combination that works.
Unfortunately, though, since this album really does start off pretty strong, Come On and Dance really doesn't do a whole lot for me. It's honestly pretty mid-tempo by the time you hit the chorus, especially. It is an atypical glam metal song before glam metal really took off. We actually get a guitar solo out of Mick Mars. It's not amazing, but I'm going to take it over nothing. One thing I am going to say about this very frequently is that this is where you get a little bit more of that 70s punk feeling. And yeah, it does leave a lot to be desired, but it'll at least make some of even the weaker songs at least feel like they have some urgency to them on some level.
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from with the late 70s punk influence. You're probably going to hear that more on this record than some of like their later catalog. I think an album like this is kind of like the perfect bridge between the 70s and 80s in terms of like the some of the larger musical trends.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that it is a little bit of an evolution away from like Sabbath and Deep Purple, but I don't think it just has that darkness or that edge that either of those bands really have. I don't really have much to say about Come On and Dance. Nothing really sticks out. Like, even the chorus for me is just kind of in one ear, out the other, to be honest.
The chorus is like probably the worst thing about this track, but at least that opening riff is like it grabs your attention but then doesn't really hold it.
The next song, Public Enemy Number One, which the Megadeth Public Enemy Number One is a better song here. It does have a nice punky chorus, I guess, to it, but again, nothing really about it stands out to me. It just kind of goes in one ear, out the other. We do get another solo out of Mick Mars, but again, he gets to show off a little bit more. I just wish the mix behind it sounded better, which I am going to make a note of this. Mike, cool if I mention who remixed this album once they signed to Elektra?
Oh, that's a good question. Who did remix this record?
Roy Thomas Baker. Do you know who that man is?
I know I've heard that name before.
He is the man who produced pretty much most of Queen's best music.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so the man who worked on Bohemian Rhapsody clearly knows what the hell he's doing, but at the same time, I don't think he can make something with this bare bones of a budget work that well.
He did the best that he could with like you said, very bare bones material.
Which I just kind of find it so funny, because there is a little bit of a feud between Metallica and Motley Crue. And I just need to throw this out there. Like, for even as low budget as Kill 'Em All was, Kill 'Em All still sounds like a better record and still holds up way better than this, for me at least. I know it sounds unfair and
very thrash elitist
for me to compare a thrash classic to a glam classic, but that's genuinely how I feel about the production. Kill 'Em All still sounds better to me.
Just to jump off to that point you made about that feud, pretty much like the first like 5 minutes of part four of Heavy, the Story of Metal, is all about all of like the big four thrash bands just having nothing but negative things to say about glam metal.
Oh, because it was a retaliation against the glitziness and the costumes and the makeup.
Yep.
The only other note I have about Public Enemy number one really is Nikki's baseline is honestly kind of awful here. It's that punk inspired style of playing, and again, I can excuse it on this album, but it is really just kind of one note. But I mean, I even had this pointed out to me fairly recently from, I don't remember which YouTube video offhand, but if you go back and listen to I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones, the guitar solo in that is literally just one note being played over and over and over again. So I guess if this song's your thing, I understand, but at the same time, it's, I don't want to say it's not my jam, but it just doesn't click with me.
The only other thing I have to say about Public Enemy number one, needs more cowbell.
Yes. Yes, it does. Next song is the most obvious dick joke in glam metal. And this next song is called Merry-Go-Round. There's at least some flashier guitar work from Mick on this track. It's another mid-tempo. I don't want to say ballad, but it's a slower song. Absolutely. But it's still not doing a ton for me.
I will say the one overarching positive I have for this record is it definitely has the least amount of ballads. Get ready for that, because probably the worst offender is going to be Theater of Pain, because that was the album with one of their biggest singles of all time.
Actually, I'm just gonna kind of back Todd in the Shadows up on this one, not to just ape off of his Generation Swine video, but not to hop too far ahead into Theater of Pain, but I would rather hear Home Sweet Home over some of the other ballads, and I'm just gonna kind of leave it at that, so that way everyone's more surprised when we talk about them. But yeah, Merry-Go-Round, it's the most typical glam title for a song, typical lyrics. It's just not really standing out to me. Again, I hate to sound this redundant trying to talk about a record that I've just heard for the first time, but it just isn't doing much for me up to this point.
I like the chorus when it gets a little bit more juiced up, but other than that, yeah, this is about as typical a glam metal song as you're going to get.
The energy does pick up on the next song, Take Me to the Top. Again, it is pretty mid-tempo and four on the floor in terms of the drums, but even the lyrics, they just kind of feel like filler just to get to the chorus, where it just repeats the song title over and over again, and that just feels like a recurring theme all throughout it.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too. Like, you're not going to this record for the most insightful lyrics. You're there pretty much for the rhythm section. And to this song's credit, yeah, that opening riff kicks ass. The instrumentals in the chorus are great. This is probably one of the better tracks on the record. Still not quite my favorite, but I would take this over some of the other ones that we've discussed.
Yeah, I'll take it over the previous three we just talked about. The next one is probably the most direct sex song on this album, Piece of Your Action. The energy at least is back, finally, after some pretty mid-tempo tracks. The punky chorus works super well here. Really, it's atypical of a glam song at the time, before it became a subgenre of metal, but this, I feel like it could have potentially been a single if it wasn't so innuendo heavy, I guess. But hey, I'll take a good song finally after three songs of kind of just padding out a little bit of the runtime. It does feel like, again, the verses only are designed to get you straight to the chorus where Vince Neil is being Vince Neil. But if the song works, the song works.
I think what I've noticed, especially after the like second or third times I've listened to this record, is with the exception of Livewire, side two has the better tracks. Like I agree with that. I think it was a smart idea to have Livewire be the opening track. That way, like, the track flow isn't as lopsided.
Yeah, it's not a front-loaded album, not at all. But at the same time, I do wish it didn't kind of just grind to a halt after track one. But again, I'm going to take a good song where I can get it. Piece of Your Action, good hard rock tune. I would have no problem if I heard this come on. Starry Eyes, our next track. I am going to be kind of honest. It does kind of come and go for me, kind of like their groupies back in the day. Ha ha ha. But there is a bit of a nice chord progression from Mick during the part before the solo section, even if it's not super thrilling, to be honest. I want to be more thrilled by his playing just because we know what he's capable on later records. But yeah, the punky approach isn't working for me as well on this one.
That's where I kind of disagree. I like the sort of punky approach to this one, especially in the chorus. It's still like kind of bottom of my favorites list, but it's a song that I kind of come back to more often of the back half.
That's fair. For me, if I'm going to come back to any song though on the back half, and I actually just heard this on my work's radio station, excuse me. For me, one of the best songs on this record actually is the title track. This is where the energy finally comes back into the building.
Yeah, Too Fast for Love is 100% the best track on this record. It has everything that you want from like the best of their catalog. It has the best chorus. It has probably one of the best opening riffs.
Probably the best thing about this is, again, the simplistic chorus. Like, it sounds very much something like the Runaways probably would have written, I personally feel. And I just feel like the actual playing on the track, it's better here. It's more interesting and has more going for it. And I feel more of an urge to go back to it if I were to re-listen to it. I'd say it's probably my second favorite on the album.
I wonder, how often do you think they've played this one live?
I am going to save that one for my final thoughts, actually. So I guess just with that in mind, we are now officially on the last track of the album, On With The Show. And I'm going to kind of be honest, it does end with more of a whimper than a bang for me. It's not exactly what I'd call a ballad, but it is probably the closest to one on this record. And it's not that it's necessarily a bad song, I feel. I just kind of go, for an album that basically kind of helped kickstart an entire subgenre of metal, I feel like you could end this thing better.
I don't necessarily disagree, but structurally, it does kind of sound like a closing track. The way Livewire sounds like the best song to open a record, like structurally, it makes sense to close a record with On With A Show. I just don't think quality wise, it's quite as good as what came before it.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with you on that. And I guess this is where I'll probably let Mike take the floor on this one, because weird enough, with the Elektra reissue, they ended up cutting, I would say, one of the better songs on this album, but for some reason it just isn't here. But it's on streaming platforms, it's on their YouTube page, and that's Stick to Your Guns.
Yeah. So one of the major differences between the Leather Records original release and the Elektra version, aside from just like bafflingly removing Stick to Your Guns, but even like the track listing is different on the two different versions. And another difference with a later release that came out in 2003 on Motley Records, you got a few more bonus tracks to chew on. There was a B-side.
Does at least include Stick to Your Guns.
Yes. Like putting Stick to Your Guns back on the Motley Records version was definitely an improvement. And then you got like a couple other B-sides. There's a track called Toast of the Town, and then a Raspberries cover for the song Tonight. That song, you know, it works. Like they do a solid job with their rendition of a pretty basic power pop song. But I almost feel like that was sort of the template for Quiet Riot's Come On, Feel the Noise.
Yeah, I didn't really jam most of these bonus tracks. I mostly just kind of went with Stick to Your Guns and felt like, okay, I've got the core of the record.
Yeah, if nothing else, at least make sure when you're listening to this that you include Sticks to Your Guns.
Even if you do save it for last. But for real, like, even to give Nikki a little bit more credit, the bass fretwork here is a little bit more technical. The hook is good. Like, it's a good track. It's just, I wish there was more stuff like this on the album.
Same.
I guess with that in mind, what are your three favorite tracks then on the record? I've got mine and an honorable mention.
Usually we try to avoid singles, but on this album, because it's such slim pickings, I'm letting Livewire be part of this. Livewire, Too Fast for Love, and Stick to Your Guns.
Mine is exactly the same, and I was gonna throw in Piece of Your Action as my honorable mention.
Starry Eyes and Take Me to the Top are my two honorable mentions.
Hey, that's completely fair. My final thoughts really is just that I don't think that this album is necessarily bad. I think it's, even for what it is, for the time it was made in, for the time period of metal that it was released in, it's worth checking out. I just think that the bare bones approach isn't really blowing my mind. I can definitely see why some people like it, but I really hope that the next record is better. To be a glutton for punishment in terms of this album, it's not exactly one I'm even seeing people clamoring for in terms of being put back into their live sets. To go back to your point earlier, Mike, you were wondering which songs off of this even get played live anymore. It's all Livewire and the title track.
I figured as much.
To make a really crass joke that people will probably not appreciate, but I'm going to go ahead and make it anyway. Some of these songs lasted about as long as Razzle did after that accident that we'll talk about during the Theater of Pain episode. Ha 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 ha. Bad joke. But yeah, like, some of these songs literally haven't been played since 1985 in a lot of cases.
Yeah, just goes to show how little this album had. This album did not leave a lasting impression outside of like just a few tracks, which is fine, you know, given the circumstances under which this was released and recorded. It's a solid first effort, but far from their best.
Yeah, I would go as far as to say it's an album to get their foot in the door, if anything. And I can respect it on that level. I can appreciate what it's going for. I just honestly hope some of the later records are better, at least, or at least give me something more to talk about, even.
Yeah. The good news is I will slightly tease our next record. Shout Out the Devil is the one that I think more people have reverence for, and believe it or not, it just celebrated its 40th anniversary last year, which was pretty much the catalyst for this series in the first place.
Oh, exactly. Like, we actually wanted to get this done in time to even have Shout at the Devil be the episode that comes out on its 40th birthday, but c'est la vie. Shit happens. Life happens. We can't all just base our lives around just putting podcasts out for everybody. But hey, go ahead and enjoy your free one that we're giving to you all. But yeah, but I'm just really hoping the next record is the one that I go, this is the one I was waiting for. But with that in mind, I don't have much else to say other than, yeah, give this album a spin if you're if you're already into glam, you've probably heard it a million times. Go back and re-listen to it as much as you want and tell me how wrong I am. But, you know, if you haven't heard it at all, I can at least safely recommend it to people. It's worth checking out to give it a fair chance.
Yeah, I stand by that. This is one of those, like, it's a comfortable recommendation. If you're a completionist trying to go through their entire discography, then yeah, you kind of have to start at the beginning. As far as debut records go, you know, it's solid, but we will talk more about their follow-up next time. And until then, Nick, where can everyone find you online?
Super Saiyan Death Metal God on Instagram. I mainly post album covers, albums I'm listening to, movies I'm watching, albums on vinyl I'm spinning, video games I'm playing, and I've even just started doing collaborations with people on my page. So go ahead and check that out. And I also post the occasional concert that I go to.
Nice. And you guys can find me on various social media at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and the website formerly known as Twitter at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on YouTube, on Podchaser. Consider supporting our Patreon at patreon.com/RenegadePopCulture. Listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. And last but not least, everything can be found at RenegadePopCulture.com. Need an escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Jukebox. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.